Blog Talk Radio.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to Hard Hits. I'm your host, Derek Felix, and it is a Tuesday evening into Wednesday morning here in New York City. As the fall weather continues to grace us with some 60-degree temps and then a lot of wind. So it's really good hockey jersey weather. So I've got plenty of hockey jerseys to choose from. But it is a big October 24th as we move on from October 23rd or October 24th. A couple of birthdays here on the Hard Hits Network. A happy birthday to Colin Kennedy, who celebrated his birthday on October 22nd. And a very special happy birthday to my brother, the one and only Justin J.N.F. Felix, by blood relation. He celebrated his birthday tonight. Matter of fact, he's still out with his friends. So congratulations and happy birthday, brother. Certainly hope you're doing well and enjoying your birthday. Yeah, a little bit under the weather here. But it is a Hard Hits show here, a little podcast. As we do a special podcast, lots to discuss, certainly. Let's start with the World Series Game 1. The Boston Red Sox, they take Game 1 by a score of 8-4 over the Dodgers. And it's business as usual. I mean, everything that Alex Cora touches just turns into gold. Tonight, didn't matter what reliever he put in for Chris Sale, whose pitch count was pretty high, and he didn't even make it out of the fifth inning. Everybody seemed to deliver. Every time the Dodgers came back, tied it up, the Red Sox came back with a couple of runs. The Dodgers just seemed to be playing catch-up the whole game. And the biggest move of the game turned out to be a counter, like a game of chess. Dave Roberts, the former Red Sox hero, who also played for the Dodgers, decided to pull a plug on Baez, went to one of his lefties, and what did Cora do? He sent up Eduardo Nunez for Rafael Devers. And Eduardo Nunez delivered a big pitch hit, 3-run home run that put the game out of reach, made it 8-4. So it was 5-4 at the time after Manny Machado had a sacrifice fly. Manny Machado had an interesting night. He had 3 RBIs in the game, RBI single, an RBI ground out or fielder's choice, and a sacrifice fly. So he certainly did his part in when it comes to knocking in the runs for the Dodgers. But, you know, he came up in a bases loaded spot and swung at the first pitch and flew it out to a shallow center. Jackie Bradley kind of made a bad throw, and the Dodgers cut it to 5-4. I'm sure, you know, the Dodger fans were probably hoping that Machado would do something bigger, maybe catch, run into a pitch and maybe drive one off the monster at least, maybe tie the game, maybe even hit a grand slam. But Machado did drive in 3 of the 4 runs, so we're not going to critique that too much because he did drive in 3 runs in the game. He certainly knows Fenway Park very well after playing for the Orioles and faring pretty well against Boston in that stadium. Once again, you just don't know what you're going to get from Clayton Kershaw. Kershaw has alternated great outings with poor outings in October. And after the brilliant performance that he had in the NLCS against Milwaukee in Game 5, the brilliant performance to give them the 3-2 lead, and then the retiring the Brewers in order out of the bullpen, a couple of strikeouts, including the game-winning strikeout to get them back to the World Series for the 2nd straight year. He ran into some problems against the Boston offense. And, yeah, the Boston offense is pretty tough. That lineup, it's very unforgiving, and sometimes you run into problems just with how to field out there in that place, because sometimes just bloops can turn into doubles, and that's something that happened to the Dodgers a couple of times. Jock Peterson, unable to field the bloop, but Benintendi, it turns into a bloop double. So, and these are the kind of things that happen at Fenway Park. And Kimbrel did come on in the ninth inning and 1-2-3. He did the job. And the Red Sox, they just look like a runaway machine right now. It seems like everything they do works out. Everything the manager does seems to just work out for him. I don't like the manager that much, but you can't argue with the success he's having. We saw it against the Yankees, where he ran out of a couple of different lineups. Steve Pierce, don't get me started on Steve Pierce. I can't take it anymore. He always killed the Yankees. When he was a Yankee, he wasn't all that good for us. But when he played for Tampa, when he played for Toronto, when he played for Baltimore, he played for the whole division, kills the Yankees. 3 home run game for the Red Sox. I'm sure he'll do something in this series as well. That's how it's been. That's the luck of the Boston Red Sox. Ever since they broke the curse, they're the team. Whenever they're basically at a lot of their big runs in October, they're the team that just everything seems to break right for them. But you know what? They're an excellent team. There's a reason why they won 108 games. They've already beaten 2 100-win teams on their way. And now they're going up against the Dodgers. The Dodgers certainly have a lot of talent. It's going to take a little more than talent to win this series for the Dodgers to pull it off. They are heavy underdogs in this series. They have a chance here to even it up in Game 2 Tuesday night. I'm sorry, Wednesday night. David Price taking them out for Boston. David Price, who had his best outing ever in the October with the 9 strikeouts where he just destroyed the Astros and erased a lot of bitter memories from October. So it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting to see what you get from David Price. I'm sure that Dave Roberts will load up the lineup and try to put a lot of his right-handed hitters in there. Dozier got the start tonight at second base. Dozier's been a bust for them. He just doesn't get any big hits. Hasn't done anything. He's been a real disappointment. know, he can put guys in and out. I mean, Kiki Hernandez might get in the game. A lot of guys got Kemp was able to have a nice debut with a home run. So it'll be very interesting. And I'll tell you what else. Joe Kelly, who hasn't been used too much by Boston. Well, Cora went to him, and Joe Kelly certainly was dominant when he came out there. Barnes also did a great job. It just seems like, you know, everybody thought the Red Sox bullpen was their Achilles heel. But with the exception of a couple of shaky moments against the Yankees, their bullpen's done a job. They really have. They've done a good job. So, yeah, maybe we were wrong about that. So that's definitely something that you have to look at, because it seems like whoever they bring in there, they get it done. And Evaldi also, I think, pitched in this game as well. I mean, yeah, that's the thing about playoffs. You got to be willing to take some risks and roll a dice. And it seems that this manager, who was on the Astros dugout, he was part of the Astros dugout last year as part of their staff, seems to just know what to do. He seems to roll the dice, and it seems to work out for him. So Barnes comes out of the bullpen, gets the win. Kershaw gets up 5 runs, left a couple of runners out there, and the Red Sox picked them up, and he gets the loss. 4 innings, 5 runs, all earned. 3 walks, 5 strikeouts, so a very bad outing by Kershaw. I would have to think that it will be a game 5 when he pitches in Hollywood. He'll pitch a lot better than he pitched tonight at home. Urias got pulled, and that was the turning point that Alex Baez got pulled, and Alex Wood faced Nunez after Devers was pitch hit for her. Nunez hit the home run, and a two out home run too. So it just seems like whatever they do works out. Red Sox bullpen, only 1 run allowed. After Chris Sale only was able to go 4 innings, he did have some strikeouts. Kemp hitting the solo home run. Sale only 4 innings and giving up 3 earned, so he didn't pitch that great. But then you have Barnes, Kelly, scoreless innings. Brashear gave up an earned run, and then Eduardo Rodriguez gets out of it. Evaldi and Kimbrel. And the Red Sox, they win game 1. They take it 8-4. And game 2 will be later tonight at Fenway Park. And what can you say? What could you say about the Boston Red Sox that hasn't been said already? They've proven everybody wrong so far, and it looks like they could again. So, but everybody's expecting them to win now at this point. So we'll see what happens with that. And that's your game 1 wrap-up. All right, so it is a Hard Hits special show here, special podcast. Derek Felix with you. I don't know if my partner in crime will call in. It is kind of late. I just decided to do this podcast out of a special, just decided to add it since it is the World Series. A lot of other stuff to get to, including the New York Football Giants. I don't really want to talk about them. They're called Big Blue. Well, all they do is make you blue when you think about how hideous they are and just how embarrassing they are. And, gee, who do you think's getting the last laugh now? Well, I would have to probably be Ben McAdoo, who was an idiot, and Jerry Reese, because the Giants have a lot of big problems right now. So we'll get to that. I did actually want to touch on, I haven't done a lot of hockey on this network, but I'm a huge hockey guy. Anybody who talks to me knows. If you follow me, you can follow me. You can follow our hockey blog, NewYorkPuck.com, and get Ranger coverage, get Devils coverage from Hassan, and Ranger coverage from me. And the New York Rangers, they are in a rebuild, so it's going to be a up-and-down year. And Well, they went to the game on Sunday night. They lost to the Calgary Flames, a game I thought they would win because Calgary was cross-country flying in. But it was the talent of the Calgary Flames that won that game. Johnny Gaudreau, Johnny Hockey, one of the best players in the league, goals, too. He really is a remarkable player. And it wasn't so much that the Rangers played poorly. They had a lot more shots. They had, I think it was 45 to 26 total. But they couldn't solve the backup goalie for the Flames. They only got one by him. Zibanejad on the power play with Kreider screening in front. Perfect shot. And they lose the game 4-1. But I'll tell you what. I mean, you listen to David Quinn in the post game. You listen to some of the players at Zibanejad talking about how they needed a little more second and third effort. Need a little more grit in their game to get those goals because they haven't been scoring a lot of goals because there's not a lot of talent on this team. And what do? They respond. They responded big time with a 5-2 win on home ice over the struggling Florida Panthers, mightily struggling, I should say, because they're the Panthers who were expected to be a team that could compete for the wild card, maybe even get back to the playoffs for the first time in a few years. They fall to 1-3-3. But I'll tell you what, you know, they didn't come out and blow you away in the first period by any stretch, only five shots, and Florida had 14 shots, but both of those shots weren't too hard, and Alexander Georgiev was able to make the saves in his first start in a couple of weeks after a couple of starts in Hartford to get back ready and sharp. They've called him back up. And he gets the start on Tuesday night, well, of course, with a little bit of an upper body issue. But he was getting the night off anyway, as Quinn pointed out. And Georgiev was ready. He did a great job, did he, and just made a lot of big saves, especially in that third period. When it got a little tight with Florida Panthers finally picking it up, made a key save when they were up by a goal, Stahl with a bad pinch, and he came up big there. But I'll tell you what, lots to like, certainly. Zibanejad backed up his words. He had a monster game, a breakout game, matching his career high with 4 points, 2 goals, and 2 assists. They trailed 1-0 after a period on a Vincent Trocheck power play goal, where Georgiev was screened on the shot. And what do? In the second period? They were killing a penalty, and Zibanejad able to take a pass for McQuaid in the neutral zone on a turnover, and he goes around the net and a beautiful wraparound shorthanded goal to beat Michael Hutchinson, tie game. And the Panthers really came on glue. They started taking some really undisciplined penalties. They've been a poor second period team, and the Rangers' power play has been coming around lately. Ever since Neil Pionk got back in the lineup, he's been playing a lot on that, on one of those points, and he continues to rack up a lot of assists. He had a 3-assist game a couple of games ago, had another assist in the loss the other night. Last night, 2 more assists, and I'll tell you, Neil Pionk looks like he's the best defenseman on his team. I mean, especially when you look at Brady Shea, who's been very up and down so far and shaky for the guy, for the first-round pick that they invested in. He's got to be a little bit sharper, I think. Quinn is not afraid to mix up his lines. He decided that he needed to make a little adjustment to the first line. Jesper Fast had been playing with Zibanejad and Chris Kreider. They had been good, but they hadn't really had that breakout. And so what does he do? He moved back to Zuccarello. Zuccarello up to that top line. Thinking maybe add a little bit more offense, add a little more of that playmaking skill. And it worked out perfectly. I mean, Zuccarello, his first 2 goals of the season, his 14th career 2-goal game. Both those goals came off face-off wins from Mika Zibanejad. Zibanejad had a great game, certainly. He scored the shorthanded goal. Then there was the power play goal by Zuccarello off the face-off win. Pionk getting it across to Zuc. And I was hoping, I was telling him to shoot. I mean, I'm watching it on the TV screen. I'm flipping between that and the baseball, but I'm telling him, shoot the puck. And you know what? He took the shot for a change. And sometimes when you keep it simple, you get the break. It went off, it deflected off a Panther in front, and Fool touches it and went in for his first goal of the season. And that made it a 2-1. And then another on this Panthers penalty, either it's another power play. And Mika's advantage, he's just got a great shot from that left circle. And Kreider with the perfect screen in front as he took the pass from Pionk off, and Kreider did get the assist, and he was instrumental on that goal, doing that front presence. And Zibanejad bangs it in for his second goal of the night. And just like that, Mika Zibanejad with 3 goals in his last 2 games is up to 5 as he leads the team. And then that made it a 3-1 game. Third period, they didn't play great in the third, but Mika wins a faceoff back to Zuccarello at about 1:27, and Zuccarello just lets it go, lets the wrist shot go. He scores on it, and that made it 4-1. And, yes, it got a little interesting with the Panthers finally picking it up and finally starting to dictate play, especially after the wraparound goal by Mike Hoffman. Looked like it deflected a little bit off Shea and off of Gorgiev with under 10 minutes left. But and then Gorgiev with some big saves, but he made the timely saves. He finished with 36 altogether and got his first win of the season. Kevin Hayes adds an empty netter with Jesper Fast making the unselfish play after beating, hustling and beating out an icing. He makes the backhand pass, and Hayes winds up scoring. Checked it to the net with the deflection. And the Rangers win 5-2 on home ice. Their first win in regulation. They are 3-5-1 through their first 9 games. The one thing I like is that they've been competitive. They're in every game. They were in the Calgary game, even though they lost 4-1. They had 77 shot attempts in that game to Calgary's 51. But they had a little bit of a bad stretch there in the second half of the second period, and they fell behind. So they fell behind from 1-0 to 3-0. But they did play a very hard third period, certainly, to make it 3-1, and came very close to making it 3-2. It's a damage add. So, you know, this team, they definitely don't quit. There's no quit in this team. They don't give up. They definitely respond to this coach. I knew they would. They had outshot Calgary on Sunday night 20-5 in that third period. A couple of close calls there. Mika, Jesper Fast, even Cody McLeod, who stayed in the lineup with Vinny Letary coming out. And Cody McLeod, he's not going to give you, too much skill, but he will give you a lot of will in the 8-9 shifts that he gets. And, who knows? Vinny Letary was the one who sat out last night as Ryan Spooner back in the lineup. Spooner and Domestikov, one of these guys needs to get a goal. They need to do something. I mean, these are the 4 million twins. Domestikov is a little more active during his shifts, while Spooner's a little more on the perimeter. These guys need to contribute, certainly. Pavel Buchnevich getting a little bit better, and he did draw a penalty that led to a power play goal. I think it was the power play goal by Zibanejad. He did draw that power play. He did have a good shot. I'd like to see a little more from Buchnevich. He started out okay with the 2 goals and the assist. 2 goals with extra man. One was a power play on a redirect, and the other one was with a goalie pulled. So I'd like to see a little more from 2 goals and an assist, but he certainly needs to play a little bit better. Filipino, I thought, was a good player, very effective in this game. Got better as the game went on, playing with Kevin Hayes on that third line, and Jesper Fast went down to that line as well. Actually, it's really the second line. Yes, it's really a checking line, but Hedo almost had his first goal. Went to the backhand, and James Reimer, who replaced Hutchinson, made the real tough save there. A real great move by Hedo. He started to look a little better, a little more confident with the puck. So I think maybe he'll come close now. Maybe he'll finally have that breakout. Rangers are going to hit the road, so they're going to be gone for over a week. First game is in Chicago, actually, against the Blackhawks, who have been a surprising team this year, certainly, especially when you think about the expectations there. Patrick Kane is certainly performing at a great level. Jonathan Toews is back and is performing very well. We've got some other big performances so far from that Chicago Blackhawks team, including the excellent second-year sophomore Alex DeBrincat with the 7 goals. Brandon Saad actually scored a couple of those, got off the schneid. So the Hawks have been a lot better than expected. Corey Crawford is back healthy, and they're winning hockey games. They beat the Ducks last night 3-1. Ducks have been a little bit up and down so far. And the Hawks who were expected to be near the bottom of their division, well, maybe not so fast. They're playing some good hockey, and they will be hosting the Rangers on Thursday evening. So that will be an interesting tilt as the Rangers hit the road for some big games. All right, that's going to wrap up our little hockey segment. We got about half an hour to play with. Obviously, I'm going to move on to another local team that's just been an embarrassment. They really have been embarrassing. I'm talking about the New York Giants. It's not so much that they lost to the Falcons. The Falcons are a better team, per se, but they're not that great. The Falcons are a weird team and a team that's probably underperforming. It's just the way they lost. It doesn't make a lot of sense. The Giants, look, we know they don't have the best offensive line. Barkley couldn't even get free for any big runs. They couldn't do anything on the ground. And you would have thought Saquon Barkley would have had another big game with 100 total scrimmage yards, as he's done throughout, but it didn't happen. It didn't come to fruition, as the Giants just unable to do much except for settle for field goals. Then when the game's basically over, then they finally rally, and Beckham finds the end zone. Of course, the big play that everybody was talking about is Shermer deciding to go for a 2-point conversion when, if you kick the extra point, it makes it a 7-point game. So why not take the extra point there? Now, I watched the postgame, and I listened to this guy talk. This is a guy who failed Browns coach, okay? And this is his second job as a head coach with the offensive coordinator last year for the Vikings. Him saying that by going for the 2-point conversion, it gives you a 50% better chance of winning. Okay. You want to do that and put that emphasis on the analytics? Say, well, yeah, if you convert the 2-point conversion, yeah, that'd probably be true. Because then you're only down by 6 points. So if you get the ball back and you score a touchdown, all you need is the extra point and you win the game. Now, I just don't get the logic. You just scored a touchdown. You're down 20-12. And you decide to go for a 2-point conversion. Never mind the fact that Beckham was just always grouchy and whining, and now dad's complaining, and he's just upset, or she's upset, because it's just like, why did you re-sign with us? If you didn't want to play here, you don't want to deal with it, just get out. I would have traded him. I said it. Or, never mind the fact that on a night where he had 7 catches for, I think, .143 and a touchdown, he dropped the 2-point conversion, which was right in his hands. He just dropped it. So it seemed like the play was there. So Shermer was right. The play was there. It just wasn't executed. But I just don't understand the logic there. And neither did Colin. He's like, what are you doing? And the Giants are basically the butt of everybody's jokes now on social media. It's just hard to believe. It's hard to believe how far this franchise has fallen since winning their 4th Super Bowl. It really is. Now, you want to critique Eli Manning. not the fleetest of foot, obviously, 37, going on 47 in quarterback category because he can't move. And he can't even if it's a two-step drop, I mean, nobody's able to protect him. Yeah, he's not mobile enough, obviously. So, and he somehow did throw for 399 yards, but most people would say, well, most of that was when they were behind, and he did miss Beckham on a fourth down where it looked like he had him on a play action pass that went said he didn't make the throw and threw it to a different area and it was incomplete. There was another fourth down play where in the first half where Beckham didn't really run to the spot where Eli was throwing it. He had run to that spot, it would have been a touchdown. So, I mean, it's just a lot. It's just confusion as usual. And New York Rangers are the land of confusion, to borrow a Phil Collins hit song. They are a land of confusion. And even though that was really about politics and about presidents and about lots of problems that are still going on today, but they are the land of confusion. This is the land of confusion. And these are the hands we've been given. I mean, it's pretty sad. Eli Apple, by the way, was brought back and kind of talked about, well, we're going to bring him back. We're going to give him a chance. Well, Eli Apple is no more. Eli Apple has gotten out of jail. He is now free. He has gotten out of jail, got his $200 get-out-of-jail free card from Monopoly, and he's now a New Orleans Saint. New York Giants trading him to the New Orleans Saints for an exchange for a 2019 fourth-round pick and I think, future 2020, I think it's a seventh-round pick. So I think it was a four and a seven, or it might have been a five and a seven. But I'll try to confirm that here. Let me confirm that. Eli Apple gets sent packing. I'm not saying that Eli Apple is the answer. I'm not saying that at all. But it is interesting that as they fell to 1-6, fall to 1-6, and they don't have a lot of good players in the secondary to begin with, Eli Apple, who they talked about, was their former first-round pick, who they talked about giving a chance. They decided, well, you know what? No more. We're trading you. So, and this guy was the 10th overall pick by Jerry Reese in 2016. And you know what the sad part is? He only had one interception. So Eli Apple does get traded. And is this the beginning of a sell-off by the New York Giants? Of them finally realizing, well, they got to do it over. It could be. So Eli Apple gone for the fourth-round pick in 2019 and seventh-round pick in 2020. So I think that's a good return. But he's gone. And he's only 23 years old. So, yes, he was a disappointment. Yes, he was a big distraction last year. Obviously, it's confusing, certainly. But the Giants decided to move on, decided that they needed to retrieve some picks, and I'm not against that. I'm definitely not against that. I think, you know, certainly that's an area that they have to address, and they're 1-6, and I don't know how many wins they're going to get. You know, the way they're constructed, they may not even get to four. They might only get maybe one or two more wins the way things are going for the Giants. So I'm not against that. They definitely have a lot of needs. Still could use a pass rusher. They still obviously need a quarterback for the future because it doesn't sound like Kyle Willett is going to be the answer. I still do not understand why Davis Webb did not at least take a snap last year before they released him this year. A lot of things just do not make sense. It seems to me that this administration is intent on getting rid of the Jerry Reese guys and bringing in their own guys. That's what it looks like to me, especially the way Davis Webb was treated after he definitely outperformed Kyle Lalletta. Kyle Lalletta was drafted by Gettleman. He doesn't even sound like he's that good. I would have liked to have seen Davis Webb. Now, as far as Eli goes, yeah, I don't know. I think, is Eli Manning going to be on the block? I mean, is he going to get traded? The deadline is coming up next week. So there is only another week to go here before this trade deadline. Eli, of course, said all the right things when he appeared on the Mike Francesa show, Mike Don, where he talked about how he's only in one organization and his loyalty to the Giants is unquestioned. And he's very professional. And I don't know, he's just the kind of athlete. He's like a throwback athlete. He will never, ever say anything negative about anybody. He'll always take responsibility when they lose, when he doesn't make the throws. He'll never put anything on his offensive line. Even his brothers, though the brother wasn't like that, Peyton buried his offensive line after a Colts lost in the playoffs. I think for the Pats, where he basically buried his line, and I think that was so cool. And I remember getting into an argument with JPG, but you know, that's just not who Eli is. It's just not in his character to do that. So, you know, it is what it is. Trade Apple. He was on his rookie contract through 2019 with the club options for 2020. The Saints, they could use another corner. Maybe they could fix him. Maybe, you know, put him in a winning atmosphere, a better environment. Maybe it works out better for him. BW Web server, it says, will be in the mix to replace Apple as a starter. I mean, look, this is the route they're going to take. You know, they did get rid of Eric Flowers. And now with the Jags. The Jags, who are a mess right now, they've got the whole Blake Bortles situation where he still will be their quarterback, but question is for how long. Blake Bortles is still hanging on to his job because they're getting replaced, and they've fallen to 3-4, have lost 3 in a row, so they've got their own issues there in that division. And you just don't know. You don't know. You don't really know the mindset is. What are the Giants going to do? Obviously, it's very frustrating. Ingram returned. It didn't even matter. I mean, because it just doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I mean, it just doesn't matter when it comes. When you're a losing team and there's a losing environment, it seems like a toxic environment, everything goes wrong. And this is the way the Giants were before I basically became a Giant fan when I was a kid. This is how bad they used to be. And then they brought in Bill Parcells, and he changed things. So I don't really know what's going to happen with this franchise. They obviously are going to need a new quarterback. They're going to need a better offensive line through the draft and not try to tweak things the way Gettleman did, thinking they could compete. They're going to need to do a lot of different things. There are certainly talent on this roster. To decide if Odell Beckham, the headache that he is worth retaining, or if they want to trade him. They could still trade him. I mean, he's a special talent. It's just that he's a headache. And everything that comes with Odell Beckham, there's a lot of distractions, which is why I probably would have traded him. I would have traded him. And I would have got back the picks. And I would have, that's how I would have done my rebuild. So, but I don't think they're going to do that. I don't know. They're stuck with him right now. And it just doesn't seem to matter. I mean, I don't know what the thinking is, what John Mara is thinking. I don't know what Gettleman is thinking. And I certainly do not understand Pat Sherman at all. With some of his play calls, the two quarterback sneaks in a row with Eli when they needed a touchdown, and Eli's doing two quarterback sneaks with no timeouts, and 35 seconds elapsed with under a minute left. I had turned it off by that point. And then everybody's talking about it, and I had to actually find out about it. So, I mean, this is what the Giants have become. They become a laughingstock. It's really hard to believe, you know, how far they've sunk. like the Titanic, basically. I mean, I don't know how you erase. You know, you can't erase what they were able to accomplish. The two Super Bowl wins over the Patriots. But now, like, all these losing seasons that they've had, and it's really hard to believe. But this is reality for the New York Giants and for the Giant football fan. This is who they are. You know, your record is what it is. You are what your record is. That's what Bill Parcells always said. And I'm sure Carl Panks would agree. Was always very good listed on the radio with Bob Papa. And I'm sure Howard Cross would agree as we listened to him on the postgame with Banks and Papa on MSG. And I'm sure any former Giant that played on those teams would agree. And Tom Coughlin established that discipline. And you can't make excuses. There are no excuses. Eli doesn't make any excuses after games because he's got a great attitude. But the question is, if he does help, does he still want to play? And it sounds like he does. Can he still play? Yeah, maybe if he's got a better offensive line, because, yeah, he could still probably throw the ball, but you just don't know. I mean, what if the Jags made the trade for him? Could he help the Jags? Or is he not the same guy? Because he doesn't always make the throws where they have to be anymore. But he could still make most of the throws. It's just, he says it's hard to imagine being with another organization. I definitely don't doubt that. I mean, he's only known the New York Giants since he was drafted. You got Shermer saying that Eli Manning will be our quarterback after the trade deadline. I don't know. I mean, Eli Manning, he has 7 touchdowns in 7 games this season. So that's really not that good. He hasn't thrown a lot of interceptions. I think he's got 4. But when you only have 7 touchdowns in 7 games, something's wrong. Something's definitely wrong. So, and if you want to blame the play calling, you could go there. You want to say it's the quarterback, you go there. Or you want to talk about the offensive line. That's part of it. There are a lot of problems with this team. So, a lot of things wrong with the New York Giants. And frankly, it's sickening. Their next game is against the Redskins on Sunday, and that'll probably be another loss. So that's where we are with the New York Giants. This Hard Hits special post-game edition here. We did our World Series wrap-up of Red Sox winning Game 1. We did stuff on the Rangers. Now we talked about the awful Giants, who are just embarrassing with the line of sight. And now I'm going to switch gears here. We'll do a little bit of NBA, and then we'll call it a show. The NBA is so unpredictable now. You just don't know what's going to happen in these games. Seems like every game is just, it's so high scoring. Like if you see a final score that's like 198, you can say to yourself, like, how did that happen? I mean, there are so many games that are winding up where you got it, where if you don't hit 120 points or 120, you're not going to win, especially in the West. 120 wasn't enough for the Lakers, certainly apparent, against the Spurs. They already entered 0-2. The L.A. Bron or LeBron era, Hollywood era, and what a crazy game that was. They lose to the Spurs in overtime, 143-142. I watched it. It was on NBA TV on the players only. And that had to be a lot of fun to do for the Candace Parker was on it. And so was Greg Anthony. I can't think of the third person that was doing it. Where they just basically put the headphones on and they're just analyzing what's going on. It's pretty interesting, actually. It's a really interesting watch. NBA TV is pretty good, actually. out of all the networks. I like what NBA TV does when they have their players only broadcast. It's pretty interesting. So and I like the insight that they have. What a crazy game that was. You know, it was back and forth. LeBron had a very, very quiet first half. I think he was in single digits, maybe like 4 points or 6 points. He was distributing the ball a little more than he had in the first two games. And he's playing like a point power forward. So because of the Lakers' guard situation. But right now, they're without Rondo after Rondo got into it with Chris Paul, CP3, a fight that was basically instigated by Brandon Ingram, who was suspended also, serving the first of four games yesterday, or the overnight, I should say. Rondo has two more games to go on his suspension. Chris Paul will serve the first of two games the next time the Rockets play. That was pretty wild. That was wild. I will say that. And the Rockets pulled that one out. Harden made some big shots down the stretch, too. You know, Lakers have been competitive. I mean, they're going to be competitive. If it's not better, it won't be competitive. They were competitive in the loss to the Blazers, but they ran out of steam. So the Blazers just torched them from the outside. Nick Stauskas was making every three-pointer. Nick Stauskas has been a bench warmer everywhere he's gone. But against the Lakers, he was a stud. He was a stud, but he scored 25 points or 24 and hit, what, 6 of 6 from three or six? He was 6 for 8, I think. Or 5 for 7 from 3-point range. It was crazy. And the Blazers wound up winning their home opener in honor of Paul Allen, the former Blazer owner who passed away, a great CEO. He passed away at the age of 65. Condolences, obviously, out to the Paul Allen family. Very sad. All right, so he was sick. It just seems like that there's a lot of that going on these days. It's really crazy. Especially, yeah, I'm a wrestling guy, too. I had Raw on and Monday night and watched this Roman Reigns, better known as Joe, went into the center of the ring and announced that his real name is Joe, and he's had leukemia. He's battled leukemia for 11 years, and he said it was back, and he had to give up his title. It was really crazy, and it's pretty sad, but very heartfelt speech, and wish him the best of luck in his recovery. He says he'll be back. Pretty hard to believe. So it just seems that every day you get is a blessing. That's the one thing I would say. Going back to the Lakers, they had lost to the Blazers and they lost to the Rockets in that crazy game where Ingram twice shoved Harden and instigated a fight, and then Rondo and Paul, who don't like each other, they have a history. Rondo apparently, or as they said, spit, so he got an extra game. And Paul put his fingers into Rondo, and of course Rondo followed up with punches, and they all got ejected. It was pretty crazy. It was nuts. The Lakers wound up losing that game. Now, and that even Rondo's like girlfriend and Paul's wife got it to it in the stands. It's chaotic. The third game, which I was briefly talking about, the Spurs. You know, they're such a weird team. There's no more Tony Parker. There's no more Manu. There's, like, everybody's gone. Everybody's gone. Duncan, of course, has been long gone. But it doesn't seem to matter. I mean, you know, I picked them to miss the playoffs. So did JPG. You know, we might be wrong about that. You know, they did, when they traded Kawhi Leonard, they did get DeMar DeRozan back. DeMar DeRozan is an excellent player. He's an all-star caliber player. He can score. He's one of the best mid-range shooters in the league. He can put up points very quickly. He can also distribute the ball. It looks like he fits that Spurs system perfectly. Pop system where they make the extra pass. He had something, I think he had like 34 or 35 points and like 13 assists. So He was on fire. He was on his game. Aldridge is one of the best, you know, mid-range shooters, since his Portland days. And when the Spurs gave him the extension, me and JPG thought it was insane. But ever since, like, they changed, ever since, like, you know, after Kawhi was out, you know, like, it became Aldridge's team again. And Aldridge has performed a lot better. But the thing about the Spurs is that they find these guys. I don't know how Popovich does it. He finds guys that you just can't believe. You can't believe that he does find these guys, but he does. He finds these guys. He found another one. I mean, it's amazing to me. I mean, you got Rudy Gay as the third option. Rudy Gay as the third option is pretty good because he can make the three when it's open, and obviously they can open it up for him because they could play. They're playing off the rolls at an Aldridge and pick and roll. But he found this Bryn Forbes kid, second year player. He scored 60 points. He's hitting big shots for them from the outside from three. They got him. Dante Cunningham's playing okay for him. Patty Mills wound up winning the game after LeBron missed two free throws. LeBron, who finally took over the game. And don't forget, the Lakers were down by 8 points, you know, near the end of regulation. This is something that LeBron had done to DeRozan when DeRozan was a Raptor. So it looked like, and I'm thinking, it's going to happen again. It's happening again. I mean, they're also supposed to be sick of LeBron. LeBron basically was having a big game. He had a big second half. They were down 8 points. Then it was down to six. Then LeBron came on a fast break and made the perfect kick out for a perfect Kuzma tray from the corner. Kuzma was on fire in the game, and he got for 37 points. And Kuzma is a really talented player. They stole him last year. What'd they steal him? Late first round or was it second round? He's really good. So he hit to cut it to three. The Spurs had the ball. Lakers didn't have to foul. They knew they were going to get the ball back. And the Spurs took a very bad shot, very bad possession. They got the rebound. At one point, there's maybe about, I don't know what there was, five and a half, six seconds. LeBron looked like he was going to signal for a timeout, and he got the rebound. But they didn't have any timeouts, and he just kept playing and it just dribbled up, and he just decided, you could tell when he's going to shoot. He just said, you know what, I'm taking the shot, despite the fact that he hadn't really been shooting the ball that well from the outside. He just said, all right, I'm going to take the shot. And Gay played a little bit off him, played just enough off him to give him the distance that he needed. And LeBron, from about 3 feet beyond the arc, swished it. And just like that, he forced the overtime. The overtime was even crazier. The Lakers, they came out strong. They had the momentum. LeBron was distributing the ball. He had 14 assists with his 32 points, 8 rebounds. And they were up by 6 points. The game looked over. It looked like they were going to win the game. And it did. It looked like they had the game won. But just like that, the Spurs came back. They didn't give up. And they're able to come back. They're able to make a three. I think Forbes made one of those threes. Or Gay did. And all of a sudden, the game is Dame makes one from way outside to cut it to 1 point. And then, of course, the sequence where LeBron gets fouled. And he was very, I don't know, he just wasn't confident at the line, very hesitant at the line. Missed both free throws. And you would have expected him to make the second one. I thought for sure he'd make the second one. He missed both. Spurs got the rebound. They call a timeout. And Popovich drew up a play. Patty Mills is a real good shooter. Patty Mills really hadn't gotten the ball a lot. I don't think I remember seeing him shoot that much on the stretch, especially in the fourth quarter and the overtime. Well, they drew up a nice play with Aldridge, set the pick, and Patty Mills drained it from 15 feet to put the Spurs up by one. But he left the Lakers a lot of time. He left them 6.8 seconds. So that's a hell of a lot of time for the Lakers after they take a timeout on a half ball. They inbound it to LeBron, and LeBron was, I was surprised because he actually decided not to drive the ball hard. Instead of, I think if he drove the ball, he probably would have fouled, or maybe he would have scored a layup or set up somebody. Instead, LeBron settled for a contested fadeaway. It was a contested step back from about 18 feet, and he missed it, and that was the ball game. And the Lakers lose 143-142. Spurs improved to 2-1, and the Lakers fall to 0-3. And this is the first time LeBron has been 0-3 since his rookie year with Cleveland, the only time that he's missed the playoffs. And, of course, he's aware of it. The one thing I would say is it's going to probably take Lakers a little bit of time to gel. They have some nice young talent there. I love Josh Hart. Josh Hart had a really nice game. He's really developing into a good player. 20 points, 10 rebounds. He's a really good young player. I'll tell you what else. Aside from Kuzma, who's terrific, and he can certainly score. And he should be starting for them, but he's been coming off the bench. Lonzo Ball looks improved. He's actually able to knock down his three-point shot. It's not the greatest one, but it looks better. He played 33 minutes, 14 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists. He looks better. And I don't even know why Caldwell Pope got the contract he did, because he didn't do anything for them. Lance Stephenson gave them some good minutes, 8 points, 4 assists. He actually played good. They don't really play Beasley. I like to see them give Beasley some minutes. Beasley can score the ball. And JaVale McGee is going to fit there, because he will finish plays when he starts from LeBron, 16 points, 8 rebounds. But the Spurs get the W. 37 for Aldridge, 10 rebounds, 5 assists. 32 for DeRozan with the 14 assists and 8 rebounds. 16 points for Forbes. 12 for Mills, 15 for Bellinelli. Gasol doesn't play as many big minutes. 9 points, 4 rebounds, 3 assists. 16 points for Gay. So per Spurs, they still find the ways to win these games. Lakers, the pieces may not all fit, but they don't forget it's only 3 games in. There are 0-3. But these are the type of games they need to win. The West is going to be very competitive this year, so it'll be very interesting to see what happens. Couple of just quick points here. I'll just to continue on the NBA in the overtime, and then we'll call it a podcast, and people can listen to it. What I mean by the pieces possibly not fitting, they don't really have a lot of great spot-up shooters. Kuzma can definitely knock down the three, but he's more of an athletic forward. Lonzo Ball, a consistent three-point shooter yet, so he's still working to get better. Josh Hart can shoot the three, but they don't really have anybody else that can really spot up. Rondo is not a three-point shooter. I don't know how it's going to work with Rondo and LeBron. They both need the ball. Rondo is an excellent point guard. He can distribute the ball. He'll rebound the ball. He'll get his points. He'll get his triple doubles, or he'll be close to that. But I don't know if that fits or not. Ingram, he did a really dumb thing. He probably should have got double the amount of games that he got. He probably should have got 8 games, not 4. Ingram has the potential to be a star. I mean, he's got the athleticism. He could shoot the mid-range shot. If he had developed the rest of his game and use his head, he could turn into a really good player. I'm curious to see, what happens with the guy that they drafted from Michigan. He was a real good player when they got all the way to the final. The Swede. I think it's pronounced with a V, though. So that's a guy that I like. So I know he's hurt right now, but I'd like to see what he can do, because he can certainly step out and shoot the three. We saw him do that. So I'm curious to see how I'm talking about Wagner. Yeah, that's right. I think Wagner will be a nice addition once he gets healthy. Mo Wagner. He's a nice player. I'll tell you. I think that was a really good draft pick. He's getting close to retiring, so it's really, they call him Mo Wagner. His real name is Moritz Wagner, Victor Moritz Wagner from Michigan. Real nice, real good player, real heady player. I think he would fit. I think he definitely fits, you know, what the Lakers want to do, certainly. And he played out of the John B line, so he's got a very good IQ. They drafted him 25th overall, and I do think he'll be a nice fit. He's recovering from a concussion, so obviously you don't want to rush him back. Any other NBA thoughts, early NBA thoughts? The Knicks have been competitive in every game. They're kind of similar to the Rangers, where they are competitive and they're in every game. It's just, you know, they got to find ways to finish the games. If they find ways to finish the games, you know, maybe they could get some W's under their belt. They did lose to the Bucks. They gave it a great effort coming back. I mean, they were down 71-52 at the half. Antetokounmpo having a big game, along with his sidekick Middleton. Bledsoe had a double-double. Bledsoe's a good point guard. Not the best defensively, but he could rack up the assists and get double digits of points. But the Knicks, certainly, you like to see them be able to win some of these games. You know, don't forget they were without Porzingis. So it's gonna be up and down right now in terms of where they are. Their next game is going to be at Miami. That's going to be tonight. It is a 7:30 game in Miami. Miami, one of those teams that expects to make the playoffs, and it'll be right there in the mix. And then the Knicks are going to come home on Friday night, and they're going to have to deal with the Golden State Warriors. Oh, boy. And Golden State's actually, I think, lost a couple of games so far. Yeah, we're seeing a lot of interesting things. The Celtics have lost a couple of games. They didn't play well against Orlando. They lost at home 93-90. Maybe it's going to take a little time for the Celtics to get adjusted with Kerry Irving and Gordon Hayward. There's a lot of talent certainly there. But you're already seeing some interesting things. The Sixers, they lose to the Pistons. And Blake Griffin puts up 50 points, including 28 in the first half. Griffin, I forgot that the Pistons actually, they brought in the former Raptors coach. That was a good hire. You know, the Raptors basically blamed their losing on their coach, which, you know, sometimes not always the coach, but they felt they needed to make a change. So Dwayne Casey's coaching the Pistons. Yeah, I mean, I probably should have taken the Pistons to make the playoffs over the Bulls, who looked really bad, even though Zach LaVine scored 30 or more in three straight games. First Bull to do that since Jordan. But the game's very different now. It's not as much defense. You know, if there is a gripe, I'd like to see a little more defense played, but the games are certainly exciting, definitely. But when you have Blake Griffin, if he's healthy and motivated with Andre Drummond, the rebound machine, could block shots. Reggie Jackson, he just needs to stay healthy. Yeah, that's the whole thing with him. Stanley Johnson. There's a lot of athletes on this team. Ish Smith is a nice backup. So there is a lot of talent on this team. I'm not sure about Orlando. I know that they've got off to a solid start, but they got off to a good start last year too, and I don't really buy them. But I think I can see the Pistons and the Hornets, you know, being two teams that compete for the playoffs. The Nets have some good young players. They do. I mean, certainly that LeVert, he definitely looks like their best player. You know, it's interesting to see, you know, what's going to happen there. But in Brooklyn, this is similar to the Knicks in that they have some good young talent where they'll be in games, but, you know, how much? You know, how good can they be? The best two players are LeVert and Jared Allen. D'Angelo Russell, he's very weird and very streaky, and you know, I just think he's overrated. He's a very overrated player. So, very interesting start, though, to the NBA season, certainly. You're seeing a lot of things that you haven't seen. And you're probably going to see more things that we haven't seen. We've seen some good games out of some rookies, certainly. Bagley III with his first 20-point game in a loss, Sacramento, when they lost to the Nuggets, who look very improved. And yes, we both believe that the Nuggets are going to make the playoffs this year. And so far, they're 3-0. It's 3-3 so far. They're very balanced team so far. So certainly something to keep an eye on. All right. Very exciting team right there. As far as Luke Walton goes, complaining about foul disparity, just shut up already. Stop complaining. And the Bulls, they got more bad news. Chris Dunn with an MCL sprain out 4 to 6 weeks. On the top of marketing, going to miss 2 months. So, no, they're not going to be making the playoffs. I'm dead wrong about that. There were only 3 games last night. Pelicans are 3-for-3 so far. Davis with 34, 13, and 5. They look pretty strong so far. So they look like they're going to be in there as a team to watch. And I think you're going to see some interesting things happen in the West this year. I think it's going to be more close together. All right. And so I'm not surprised. Toronto's off to a 4-0 start. The Kawhi Leonard era so far, looking pretty good. They're looking pretty tough right now. They beat the Celtics already. You got the Bucks at 3-0. They should be a playoff team. They've got a lot of talent there. Detroit 3-0. So these are the teams that have all started well. Celtics with 2 losses already. Indiana 2-2. All right, the Knicks are 1-3. At the bottom of the spectrum, it's Bulls 0-3 and looking very bad. And the Cleveland Cavs, who are going to be in for a long year, 0-3, are probably going to wind up with a high lottery pick. And up west, the two unbeatens are Denver and New Orleans. Denver 4-0. New Orleans 3-0. Golden State is 3-1. They played a very good game against Utah. That was a great game, too, over a weekend, last Friday night. That was terrific to watch. They wound up putting it on Tippett by Derevko. Portland 2-1, San Antonio 2-1. Memphis has won 2 of its first 3. Dallas has won 2 of its first 3. They're going to be a little improved. Memphis, I don't think they'll be that good. Clippers are a competitive team. They got some nice players there. I'm thinking of the former Nick, who I can't seem to remember. Gallinari, yeah, they got Gallinari. They got some good players. I don't know how good they'll be. Minnesota is 2 up and 2 down. Jimmy Butler's distraction remains. The Suns are 1-2. Utah 1-2. Houston's lost 2 of its first 3. And then at the bottom, joining the Lakers at 0-3 are OKC. OKC should come around now that Westbrook's back. Very interesting dynamic going on there. So, I mean, it's early in the season. You're seeing a lot more points put up. I still think at the end of the day, it will come down to the teams that can get the stops in crunch time, even if the scoring is going to be up, especially when you got the new 14-second rule on offensive rebounds. So that speeds it up even more. It gives teams more chances to score really quickly. So you're going to see higher scoring games. And with the whole league going small, it's just creating more of a fast tempo. Teams are just looking to take a lot more threes. They're looking to run. It's not as much of a half-court game. You're not going to see the traditional post-ups that we used to see where your centers used to be able to just dominate. That's just not how the game's played anymore. I liked it. I liked watching post-ups. I like watching guys like Patrick Ewing. I like watching guys like Hakeem. Whether they drew the double teams or they finished plays. But that's just not the way the game is played anymore. So it is what it is right now. I definitely would like to look at, you know, what the stats are on teams and what the scoring averages are. That's the whole thing for me right now. You know, what are the averages right now? You know, who's leading in terms of points per game? That would be my whole thing. So what we'll try to do, baby, is try to give you more on that. Maybe next time. You know, this show's basically done anyway. We've certainly have gone over a lot of stuff so far, and it's been a good show, a good podcast. Certainly, you could check out more of our podcasts. You could check out Chris's show, his Fantasy Hockey X show, which I think he did last night earlier. And you could check out some more of our shows here on the Hard Hits Network. Certainly a lot of things going on. The World Series Game 2, that's going to be a big one, especially for the Dodgers. If they want to get back in it, give themselves an opportunity here. And don't forget, the next three games would be in Dodger Stadium. So that's something to look at right there. But certainly a lot of big things going on, and we're gonna see a lot of guys that are gonna put up a lot of points. And the whole thing that I have to say is this: you know, how would a Michael Jordan have done in this era, the way the game's played now? How would he have done? Or Charles Barkley, or a lot of different guys who could score the ball, or Shaq? Would Shaq have been as good in this era? There's a lot of questions that you can ask, and I'm asking them. I'm certainly asking them, because it's really hard to believe when you see, you know, the amount of points these teams are putting up. You know, so far, right now it's the Pelicans. They average 132 points so far. Lakers 125.3. Portland 124, Sacramento 122, San Antonio 121. Teams that actually allow the least, the Celtics, are 98.5 so far. Nuggets 99.8. Those are the only two teams who allow less than 100. The next three are Indiana at 103.5, Memphis at 104, and Toronto at 106. Now, Toronto's got some guys who could play some defense. So Ibaka being one. And of course, Kawhi being another one. So it helps. You know, you got to have some frontline players, some guys that play two way to be able to defend. But I guess my question would be, like, you know, which teams are we going to see that really can buckle down? So that's the whole question as far as. Okay, so we're going to find out a lot about that. Certainly, that's going to do it. That's going to be a wrap on the show. Maybe next show we'll have some more World Series stuff. Try to do it at a more normal time so we can have some of our guests lined up. Maybe we'll do like a live thing and we'll do a post game. We could possibly do that. Well, maybe we'll save that for Friday because Friday's probably going to be easier, or Saturday. You know, that might be an easier thing to do, where we could do another one of those live, where we go for the first seven innings, or maybe we come on in the middle of the game from third inning on, where we do some post game. Where you could do the 2 hours. So that's something we can do. Get into some more hockey as well. Check here. What's on the schedule for the Wednesday night games? Just take a look here. Since we are looking into the hockey. All right. What do we got? Wednesday, October 24th. Only four games. Eight teams on the schedule. New York Islanders, they're not playing all that great. They're hosting the Florida Panthers, coming off another loss. Well, Florida doing that game. Here's a question: is Barry Trotz a bad thing for Matthew Barcell, who's already a -7, only a goal? So is that bad news for Matthew Barcell? Winnipeg has hosted the Toronto Maple Leafs. That is a must-watch. If you get the chance to watch that, I don't know if you get the hockey package or if it's on, you know, NHL, if it's on NHL Network or if it's on NBC Network, WPCSN. Winnipeg, one of the highest-scoring teams against Toronto, one of the highest-scoring teams. Boy, that could be a very fun watch. How about the Lightning? The Lightning are visiting Colorado. Colorado's got the best line in hockey right now with Nathan MacKinnon, center Mikko Rantanen, and Linus Cog. They've got points in all nine games so far. The Lightning, Stamkos off to a very slow start for only 3 points. Kucherov off to a little bit of a slow start, 7 points, but the Lightning have other guys performing like Braden Point. They've been off to a little bit of a slow start as well. All right, and the final game is the surprise of Vancouver Canucks. They've played pretty well so far, hoping to get Elias Patterson back very soon. Bo Horvat, the future captain, they're taking on the Vegas Golden Knights, who have recovered to get back to 4-4 and are playing better hockey. So that's your story there. Crosby finally scored a couple of goals in a 6-5 win for the Pens, scored the first goal, scored the game winner, a beautiful OT winner where he deked the hell out of Ryan Strom and scored on a backhand. So much for Crosby being done. He's not done. He's gotten off to slow starts before. He's still Sidney Crosby. So that's my final take on things. All right. And the second best line in hockey is that line with Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and the guy that I took first overall, David Pasternak, who scored 2 more goals, had 4 points. And he's tied Foster Matthews for the most goals so far, 15 points. So those are the best lines in hockey. Toronto would probably come in third with Austin Matthews, whichever line Matthews plays on. Does he play with Tavares? I think, do they play on the same line? I can't even think, but there's a lot of really good lines in hockey. There's going to be a lot of debate. I mean, anybody who plays with Connor McDavid, obviously, too. You know, certainly worthy. You know, that Calgary line with Goudreau and Sean Monahan is pretty good as well. Elias Lindholm. You got a few pretty big dynamic lines out there. Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin, when they play together, pretty good. Sebastian Aho is a rising star as well. So a lot of good lines. Definitely check out our podcast. Make sure you download it on iTunes or you can listen to any of our shows. And thank you for tuning in, all right? That will do it. Have a good night, everybody. See you later.